Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and this is Literary Viewpoints. And the sun is finally shining. We had a storm last night, so it's going to be a great day and a great show. And today we have Herbie J. Pilato, who is the author of several media tie-in books, including my favorite, which is in my hand, Twitch Upon a Star. And we have Gidgets and the Girl Next Door, and many other books that Herbie has written. And I am totally honored that he's here today. We're going to do a special tribute to one of my favorite icons on television. On May 18th, 1995, Elizabeth Montgomery died from cancer, and that was sad. And Herbie wrote Twitch Upon a Star, which includes a commentary from many people associated with her, before and after and during Bewitched. So good morning, Herbie. How are you?
Good morning, friend. I'm great. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, too. They're getting ready, you know, ready for it around here, too, the little kids. But I was never allowed to do trick-or-treating, so I never had the fun until I was teaching, when I did trick-or-treating with my, you know, reading groups in school, and we, you know, got dressed up and scared everyone. It was fun. So this is a special... What?
No, I was going to say, one of the great things about Elizabeth is that she used to trick-or-treat for UNICEF. She became one of the first to select to utilize her public persona for a social cause. And Samantha would trick-or-treat for UNICEF, too, on the show all the time. So.
Well, Bewitched is still on television, everyone, and it's on TV Land. And when you want to smile and you want to laugh and you want to watch something that kids should watch, you watch Bewitched with Elizabeth Montgomery. So what made you decide to focus your energies on writing about her? And you got to tell everybody what happened the first time you ever met her. That must have been really amazing.
Yeah, that was all great. Well, I grew up in Rochester in the inner city, and it was tough for me. And my parents didn't have a lot of money. The family a lot of money, so I gravitated toward television in the 60s, like so many of us did, you know, during turbulent times, the violence of, you know, the era, Vietnam, the race rioting, all of it. And so a lot of people gravitated towards escapism television. I certainly did as well. I was just fascinated with the magic of the show, like a lot of kids, and as I grew up and started watching the show, an adult, I was even more fascinated. It's this beautiful woman who actually loved this guy, this regular guy, for who he was and not for what he could buy her or do for her. And, you know, whatever he could buy or do for her, she could twitch up something better anyway, so it didn't matter. So there was a real love story. She had her priorities, and he had a strong work ethic, and the show was really about prejudice, you know, and I was picked on as a kid. I was bullied as a kid, and Samantha, I just gravitated toward her for so many reasons. So when I finally decided to write about the show years and years later, it actually started out as I wrote a reunion TV movie for the series, and Elizabeth did not want to do that. And I said, how about we do a book about the show? I originally wrote a book about the show that I then rewrote as Bewitched when she died. I knew that her story was so expansive that I would also one day write a complete story about her life, just her life, with Twitch Upon a Star happened. Then when Twitch Upon a Star was published, 2012, it became the best title in my publisher's history, and so we did a sequel to the book called The Essential Elizabeth Montgomery, A Guide to Her Magical Performances, which talks about the over 200 performances that she did before Bewitched, and then also her TV movies after Bewitched. So meeting her was magical, you know? I couldn't believe that I actually, you know, was in her house and in her beautiful home. And it was so funny because when I first met her, I, you know, reached out my hand at the door. I go, hi, my name is Herbie. I walked in. and then I trip over her coffee table. So that kind of broke the ice, and we laughed about that. And the first thing she asked me was, you know, why are you doing this? In other words, why are you first writing the book about Bewitched? And I told her, you know, all the things that I just said here, because I love the show. It was a message about true love. Samantha was, you know, a wonderful human, even though she was a witch. She had many human qualities and better human qualities than a lot of mortals. And so once I told her my real love for the show and that I really cared about her career as a person and all the things that she did so much with her public persona, you know, she really opened up to me, and it was quite lovely and quite magical.
Well, let's talk about her family, as long as we're talking about her life. Her father, her mother, her relationship, and then she has two children, a boy and a girl, right?
Actually, she has three children. Two boys and one girl. Mm-hmm.
Right, and Rebecca Asher is the daughter.
That's correct. And they're all lovely kids, and they're all down to earth, and they're wonderful, just like she was. Her relationship with her dad was I don't want to say love unlike. You know, Robert Montgomery was a famous movie star in the 30s and 40s, and then he hosted Robert Montgomery Presents Psychology TV show in the 50s, made her TV debut. And she went on to do several other episodes of that show as well. But her father didn't want her to be an actress, and he was very strict with her growing up. But once she did decide that she was going to be an actress, and he saw that she was serious about it, he completely supported her decision. And he was her toughest critic, very, very tough. And then in life as well as with acting. And when he divorced her biological mother, Elizabeth Allen, that kind of put a wedge between them. He was not happy with that. And then when she became a bigger star than he ever was because of Bewitched, he wasn't happy with that. As a matter of fact, she wanted him to play her father on the show, but he turned her down, and that hurt her a great deal. And then when she married her first husband, Fred Seaman, who was a big roller, and he also worked on Robert Montgomery Presents, I believe, as a casting director. When she married him, her father loved it because such a prestigious marriage. But the marriage did not last, and because he wanted a wife, and he wanted to be an actress, so it only lasted a year. And then when she married Dig Young, he was a senior. Her father had a fit. He was not happy with that at all. And Gig Young was also an alcoholic and an abusive gentleman, an abusive man in the marriage. And so she finally divorced him. And then she married William Asher and then later Robert Foster, who I believe both of which were the two true loves of her life. You know, Billy Asher, they met on the set of Johnny Cool, which is a movie he directed and she starred, and then of course they partnered on Bewitched later.
Well, how did you know? I read in the book, it was interesting. She had a very close relationship with her children, didn't she?
Yes. Her children. She never thought that she was the ideal mother because she was working all the time, but they adored her and they. And she really, even strict as Robert Montgomery was with her, Robert Montgomery made sure that she had her priorities in line and that she never felt she was better than other people despite their status. Mm-hmm. And so Elizabeth then just transferred that down-to-earth personality into her three kids. You know, as a matter of fact, Billy Asher, the first son, once told me that he had friends over at his house one day. He'd never tell anybody who his parents were. And so he and his friend were like in the living room, and Elizabeth came in to get a magazine or something, and his friend freaked out. Oh, my God, it's Elizabeth Montgomery. And he's like, that's just my mom, you know. So it was really just so sweet. Isn't that cool? So I really respect that, you know, and that's also why I respected Elizabeth, is because she never made a big deal about being a movie star or a TV star, you know, she brought that down-to-earth personality into Samantha and made everybody love and believe in witches because she was so adorable in the role.
Yes, she was. She was amazing. So how, you were right, it was about prejudice. It was about acceptance and understanding and tolerance. But you had the Andorra, Agnes Moorehead, that played just the opposite. And Agnes made sure that she didn't accept Darren no matter what. And that played a strong part in Bewitched. I know that. And there was her father, Maurice. And, of course, my favorite person, Pauline, Uncle Arthur, and Aunt Clara. And they sort of let you know that Darren wasn't what they wanted. So how did she feel about that while she was doing this particular show?
Well, Elizabeth and Agnes Moorehead, off-screen, you know, they had a great deal of respect for one another. But, you know, they were two very strong-willed women. And they loved each other dearly, and in many ways it was a mother-daughter relationship off screen. Certainly, Agnes had a great deal of respect for Elizabeth's father as an actor, because Agnes was trained in the Mercury Theater with Orson Welles, and she came from that whole troupe of, you know, very elite actors. But, they were issues, and one of them was when Dick Sargent replaced Dick York as Darren, so Agnes Moorehead was not pleased with that because she loved Dick York, I know, as did we all, and it was hard for her to accept Dick Sargent. But York had to leave the show. He was, you know, very early, hurt his back on a movie that he had did years before, and so he became addicted to painkillers, and so he could no longer function on the show. So they had to replace him. But Agnes Moorehead did not make it easy for Dick Sargent, even into the second year that he was on the show, which was the seventh season of the show, when they did on-screen, or they did on-location shoots in Salem on the way home on the plane from Los Angeles, you know, Dick crying. David White, who played Larry Tate on the series, Darren Foss, told me Dick Sargent was crying because he was treating him. So finally, Elizabeth had to set Agnes straight, and she called her over into her dressing room and said, "Look, you got to cut Dick Sargent some slack. It's not easy for him." And finally, Agnes Moorehead came around. But ultimately, you know, in the beginning, she gave Dick Sargent as much trouble as Agnes Moorehead gave Darren on the show.
Yeah, I often wondered how they did the magic on the show and how they made things disappear and made things reappear. And, of course, I think everybody wants to know the secret behind the Twitch, which I know.
Well, you know, the show was done before CGI or whatever, all those special effects magic that happens today. So if they had to make someone disappear, they would film Elizabeth, you know, there, and then they stop tape, and then she'd walk out of the shot, and they'd film the same spot with her not in the shot, and then they'd splice it together to make it look like she disappeared. The Twitch, actually, the night before they filmed the pilot, Bill Asher and Elizabeth had still not come up with a way to manifest for Samantha to manifest the magic. And so Bill, however, remembered some little nervous thing that Elizabeth did with her face, and he was trying to remind her. He said, "Lily, what's that thing you do with your face? You know, when you get nervous and upset, what is that thing you do?" And she didn't know what he meant. And he kept on prodding her, and finally she became so aggravated with his question that she did the twitch, and he goes, "That's it, the nose twitch, what you just did, we're going to use that for Samantha." And that's how it was born. But what a lot of people don't know, too, is that it wasn't her nose that she moved, it was her upper lip, and her nose fell into place. So that's why when people try to do the split, they try to move their nose, it doesn't work. You got to move
I don't think anybody
lip.
In the whole world could do the twitch except Elizabeth Montgomery, and she's up there doing it right now, I could tell you that. So you did a whole lot of interviews with other actresses and actors about Elizabeth Montgomery. How did you decide who you were going to put in Twitch Upon a Star?
Well, I wanted to choose and select the people who really knew her the best and who could give me the truest, honest answers about her life.
Mm.
And so three very important people that I interviewed for the book include Sally Kemp, who was her very dear friend growing up in Paterson, New York, on the Montgomery estate there. Also Cliff Robertson, the incredible Oscar-winning Cliff Robertson, who was also a very good friend in New York. And then people like Ronnie Cox, who was her co-star in a couple TV movies, namely A Case of Rape, which was her Emmy-winning, Emmy-nominated performance in that NBC TV movie from 1974, which became the top one of the top 10 TV movies of all time, and it still is. So people like that, I wanted to make sure that I talked with.
What about Betty Davis?
Oh, Betty Davis.
I love Betty Davis.
Yeah, she was the best. Betty Davis was very good friends with Elizabeth's father, Robert Montgomery. And she, as a result, she also became friends with Elizabeth, and it was a really Betty was tough too, and I think Betty was the only one that Elizabeth allowed her to call her Betty, because Betty is an extension or also short for Elizabeth, you know, and Elizabeth went by Liz and Elizabeth, but not really Betty. And later on, she liked Lizzie because of the legend of Lizzie Borden horror movie. But she never really wanted anybody or let anybody call her Betty except Betty Davis. So,
let's get to you, though. Let's talk about Herbie Pilato. Of all the shows, you acted in a few shows, right? How did it feel acting with, this must have been great, Estelle Getty, Betty White, Rue McClanahan, and Bea Arthur in The Golden Girls?
I was an extra on The Golden Girls. I did a lot of extra work before I started writing. I was in General Hospital. But I worked on The Golden Girls first when I was a page for NBC. I worked on one of the first press parties for that show before it debuted, and I met each of them. It was so interesting because they each looked at their car. I noticed that right away in one of the lots when I worked later as a page as well. Rue McClanahan had a Mercedes, a beige Mercedes. Bea Arthur had a big black BMW. Betty White drove a silver, a mint green Cadillac Seville, and. Estelle Getty, before she became, you know, really popular and successful on the show, she was driving a blue Chevette. So it all fit, you know. It was very funny. But Betty White was a doll. Bea Arthur was not confident, which I found very amazing because, you know, Maude and her character on The Golden Girls were confident. Rue McClanahan was a sweetheart. Estelle Getty thought I was her nephew Phil when first meeting me, because apparently I look like him. So it was great fun. And by the way, those stories are in my NBC and Me book called NBC and Me, My Life is a Page in a Book. So that's also another book of mine.
Well, I didn't see that one either. Now, you also worked with, this is so exciting because you do Throwback Thursday. I have to bring that out, people, on Facebook. You do Throwback Thursday. This is Throwback Thursday. We got Elizabeth Montgomery. Ha-ha.
Yes.
And you have some of my favorite people, Cindy Williams and Anson Williams and all the people from Happy Days and all of the iconic shows that people need to watch just to laugh. But how did you feel working with one of my favorite in the world, Mary Richards, Mary Tyler Moore? I love Dick Van Dyke. And Barb Newhart. You work with them also,
well,
right?
Yes, I didn't work with them. I profiled them on a special I did about 10 years ago for TLC called Behind the Scenes special for on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, on the Bob Newhart Show, L.A. Law, and Hill Street Blues. So I never met Mary, but I didn't meet Dick Van Dyke last year or a couple years ago, one of his signings. He's a great man, and I want to definitely get him on my Throwback Thursday show some night. Mary, I believe, is not doing too well. You know, she's very...
No, I heard,
she's had health issues, God bless her, but what an incredible talent. Last week, I had Don Wells from Gilligan's Island on my show, and tonight... Yes, she was great. She's gorgeous still. Tonight,
gorgeous,
I have Chris York. Tonight we have Chris York, who is son of Dick York, and David Block Mandel, who was little Adam on Bewitched, and then Bruce Kimmel, who was the Adam, the grown-up Adam on the first Tabitha pilot for the Tabitha series, and Pop Hayden, a magician, of former VP of Magic Castle, and then also James Commissar, the incredible James Commissar, who is, he has the incredible memorabilia collection. He's bringing a special piece of Bewitched memorabilia to the Burbank Barnes & Noble. So you guys, if you're in Burbank, 7 p.m. tonight, it's a Bewitched night of Halloween magic.
Oh, I would love to have some of these people on my show with you. I would absolutely be thrilled to interview them and have them talk about where they are now and how Bewitched, you know, impacted their lives. That would really be fantastic.
I will put you in contact with them.
Please do, because that would really be fantastic. And I can tell you now, there's a whole lot of people that would be listening, that's for sure. So where did get the information for all of the bios and all these people?
Well, I wrote these books. I wrote certainly the Bewitched book. Now, what do you mean, the Bewitched, or the, which bios do you mean?
Well, for Bewitched, how did you find out all about Elizabeth Montgomery? Then I want to talk about, you said it's 40 years since Lizzie Borden, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I finally got that right.
Yeah, absolutely. And 20 years since she passed. So this is a double anniversary. It's the 20th anniversary of her passing and the 40th anniversary of the debut of the legend of Lizzie Borden. As to how I got the bios, you know, when I wrote the first Bewitched book way back in the 80s, there was no internet. And, you know, there was no easy access to IMDb and Google and Wikipedia. So I had to, you know, go to the library or go to memorabilia stores in L.A. where I'd find old bios, studio bios on all the stars. And then I just would obviously call up, you know, SAG or Screen Actors Guild or whatever to get contact numbers for these people, and I would actually interview. Many of them were alive at the time. Unfortunately, I never interviewed Agnes Moorehead or Paul Lynn, but I talked to Agnes's nephew and I talked to Paul Lynn's sister. But I interviewed Elizabeth Montgomery, David White, Dick York, Dick Sargent, Alice Ghostly, Bernie Capel, all the writers and producers associated with the show, William Asher, the genius Harry Ackerman, Saul Fax, who co-created Bewitched with Harry Ackerman, just, you know, everyone who was alive at that time I talked to. So
that's great. That
driven.
Must have been amazing. Alice Ghostly played Gladys Kravitz. Oh, my God.
She played Esmeralda, the maid.
Oh, Esmeralda, right.
And Gladys Kravitz was played by Alice Pierce first, who died before I got her. She died way back during the show. And then Sandra Gould. I interviewed Sandra Gould to play the second Mrs. Kravitz. And, of course, Casey Rogers, the beautiful Casey Rogers, who played the second Louise Tate, and Irene Vernon, who played the first Louise Tate.
And of course she played, you know, also Serena. So after a while, how come Elizabeth Montgomery decided she didn't want to do Bewitched anymore? She wanted to do something else. And that must have been hard on the cast too.
It was hard for everybody. Because Elizabeth was growing tired of the show. She and Bill Hatcher were having some marital difficulties. And she wanted to branch out. She'd been twitching her nose for 8 years. And you know, if you look at that last season of Bewitched, she looks a little, you know, like, okay. Sometimes it looks like she's going through the motions. But she did not hate the show. She loved the show. There's this misconception that she hated doing the series. That is not true.
Mm.
She absolutely loved it. She was very grateful for it. She just, as an actor, she wanted to branch out. So when she finally left the series, and the show was renewed for 3 years, the show was not canceled because of bad ratings. It was it was canceled because Elizabeth wanted to
do something else.
Right, but it was actually renewed for 3 years, but she said no, and she went in. She did the TV movie called The Victim for ABC in 1972, and then she did Mrs. Sundance in 1974, where she met Robert Foxworth. He co-starred on that, and they fell in love. And then she did The Legend of, A Case of Rape, which was a really wild show, where, you know, it was so traumatic a thing to see the actress playing Samantha getting raped. And then when she did The Legend of Lizzie Borden, well, forget it. You know, there she was playing an axe murderer, and which, by the way, her father was shocked that she did that part. You know, he said something like, "You would," you know, and that's I talk about that in the Legend of Elizabeth Montgomery article that I wrote for Emmys.org, the Television Academy, which is accessible online today. And there's also the Closer magazine with Judge Judy on the front. They did an article on Elizabeth Montgomery that I was interviewed for, that also Robert Foxworth was interviewed for.
Well, I want to remind everybody that if they want to see, I did a spotlight on my site on Just Reviews on WordPress. I did a special tribute to Elizabeth Montgomery on May 18th, 2015, which marks 20 years since she passed away. And I've got a lot of Herbie's interviews, a lot of articles. I've got my book review on Twitch Upon a Star. So that's a start. And I would suggest you guys read the book because it's really fantastic. And being a reviewer who has reviewed thousands, seriously, thousands of books and memoirs, this one kept my interest and it was really interesting. But as Herbie knows, I took my time reading it because it's one of those books that you want to make sure that you get all the information down and appreciate what Herbie wrote. So I've got more questions for you. Before I do that, I better announce Tuesday, November 3rd at 11, because she's far away, Catherine Coulter, November 3rd, The Endgame with J.T. Ellison. Book is fantastic. November 5th, Tanya Kappas, A Ghostly Murder. Absolutely hilarious. November 10th, The Lost Codex with Alan Jacobson. New York Times bestselling author, award-winning author, Brian Friedman, on November 11th. He's going to vote West 57th. It's a romance murder. It's different. And Mike Bond on the 18th. And then I will be back in January with more. So tell me, how and why did you found Classic TV Preservation Society, and explain why this foundation is so important and how close it is, close the gap between popular culture and education?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for the most thorough review I ever got at Twitch Upon a Star. It was just beautiful. I wanted to say that. Thank you for that.
That's because I read it. People, and nobody reads books anymore.
It's true. But that was, it was so wonderfully thorough. I was astounding. But the Classic TV Preservation Society really happened again because of Elizabeth. There was an episode called Sisters at Heart of Bewitched, where Tabitha befriends a young girl who happens to be African-American. And they really get along really well. And they go to the park, and they're made fun of because they want to be sisters, but they don't look alike. And there's bullies in the park that say, you can't be sisters because you don't look alike. And so they're hurt by that. And then, Tabitha wants so much to look like or to be sisters that she puts a spell on she and the girl to look alike, but white polka dots show up on the little African American girl and
red
polka dots show up on Tabitha, right?
I remember.
But not only it was really a premium representative of what the show meant in general about prejudice, but the real great thing is that it was written by the 1971 or I believe 70 graduating class of Jefferson High School in Los Angeles, who were a mixture of Latino, Italian, African American, white, everything. Mm. And they loved the show, the producers of the witch found out about it, and the producers asked them to write an episode, and they wrote this episode, which won the Governor's Award. So that inspired me when I first wrote the Bewitched book in 92 to go to schools and colleges and community centers and businesses and talk about the meaning of bewitched. And so I started doing that. And then when I was on Facebook initially a few years back, I put I knew I had to keep – I was always answering questions about Bewitched or the seminars or whatever, and I knew I had to make some kind of formal group. So I said, well, let me call my new Facebook group the Classic TV Preservation Society. I mean, you know, it just came to me. It was that title, from wherever. And then
well,
when
you
it
know,
became,
as it,
I got like, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I hear you.
Oh. And so after that, overnight, it got like 1,000 members overnight. And it kept on growing. And then I realized I had to make it something very real. I had to turn it into some kind of actual nonprofit organization. And I don't know, you know, I don't know if you know this, but I'm certain that there are listeners. When you form a nonprofit, it's no easy thing to do. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. But I felt that this is so representative of something I was compelled to do that my other books, Kung Fu Book of Cain, Kung Fu Book of Wisdom, the Bionic book about the $6 million man, the Bionic woman, Life Goes On about Corky who had Down syndrome, all of those characters and shows represented prejudice. Samantha was a witch in a mortal world. Fai Cheng Keen and Kung Fu was an Asian in a Western world. Even Jamie, the Bionic people, felt ostracized because they were half man, half machine. Half woman, half machine as well. Corky, certainly. He had Down syndrome and he was disabled. And then Chad Lowe, who came on the show later as Jesse McKenna, who had HIV and later full-blown AIDS, they were prejudiced against. So there was this running theme in all my books that started with Bewitched that I now incorporated into the Classic TV Preservation Society. And I go across the country talking about the positive influence of classic television shows, expanded it into Perry Mason, how people became lawyers because of Perry Mason, people became doctors because of Marcus Welby, families learned to communicate and love each other because of the Brady Bunch, the Waltons, and on and on. So I will come to your school, your college, your senior center, your business facility, wherever, just contact me. At herbiejpilato.blogspot.com or go to classictvps.blogspot.com. And I'm working on the new website, classictvps.org, which should be up shortly. Contact me and I will come wherever you are across the country to your business, school, a college, community center, or whatever, however you want me to appear at your facility. And I will talk about the positive message of Classic TV.
That would be fantastic because there are so many kids out there that go through cyberbullying. And I don't know if everybody knows it, but basically I taught in the public schools for 36 years. I was a reading and writing staff developer and a dean, an assistant to the assistant principal. And had my mom not been diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2002, 2003, I probably would be still there. Self-esteem is a hard one. And you get a lot of kids in school that are bullied, and that's one thing I wouldn't tolerate ever, and name-calling, and you even get it on the street. When I lived in the Bronx,
yeah.
I used to hear it all the time, kids calling each other names. And I actually saw high school children kids in some of the bodegas that I went into in the morning, and I would say to them, is that the best you could do? Is that the best you could shoot? And actually, they would stop for some reason. It must have been my tone of voice or my attitude or whatever. But I think kids need to know more about self-esteem and not letting anyone put them down for who they are or what they look. And I was always, I'm thin, very thin now, but I was always overweight as a kid. So I know how it feels to be made to feel like, oh, you know, you weigh 190 pounds and you're 10 years old. You know, what's wrong with you? And nobody bothered to find out except my mother as to why I couldn't lose weight afterwards. I did. So this is important, self-esteem, and teachers can do an awful lot of lessons. So I would think that if you contacted guidance counselors and support groups and even clergy, and they have discussion groups, that would be great. That would be great.
Yes.
And maybe you'll even write a book for kids on self-esteem, and then I will give it to my niece, who is my book partner. I have a 7-year-old niece, Penelope, who takes all my children's books and devours them because she loves to read, and she thinks it's my fault that she reads, she said, which is fantastic. So what?
Yes.
Yeah, she's a trip. So what else would you like to add? What are some other things that you've written and some other things that you've worked on that you would like our listeners to know about?
Well, certainly, you know, the Classic Heat Preservation Society is, you know, just great, very close to my heart with my TV and television seminars. I'm also, you know, a producer and a writer of plays, so I've appeared on and a consultant on many DVDs for classic TV shows and many documentaries of classic TV shows, scripts about family-oriented scripts about angels, which I'm working on developing as TV movies and feature films. There's just big things going on. I feel so, you know, it took a long time. When you choose the artistic life, if you're not initially independent and wealthy, it takes a long time, you know, to find your voice, to find your niche in life, and I did. And for a good portion, and I have to say this too, for a good portion of my 30s, I stopped my career and I dedicated my life to my parents, who were both ill in their elderly years. I became their primary caregiver, which is how I got involved with seniors, and it really did help to shape me as a human being, and I never regret one moment of caring for them, because they were beautiful people who I call St. Francis of Turin, my mother's last name, and St. Pompey, my father's name. They loved me, and I never felt that the universe was going to abandon me or not abandoning them. And, you know, honor thy mother and father is big with me. And honor thy father and mother doesn't just mean honor them while they're alive. It means living the life fully that God gave you through your parents. And that's what I'm trying to do now, is to be as good a person as I can. I'm no angel, believe me. But I try to be as good as I can, and I try to do as much good as I can wherever I go. Don't always make it, but I try to do the best I can. And that's why I believe so much in television, because there's a lot of not good television on, but there's all today, but there's a lot of good television. And certainly the older shows are more of a testament to what great television is and can be, and that's why I love it so much, and that's why I try to utilize it for today so much. In my books, in my own TV shows that I will be producing and be featured in, too, I also am working on doing a talk show, which is, you know, the Throwback Thursdays really is a pilot program for my own TV talk show. I'm working on that as well. But all positive, all family-oriented, you know, that's the message, you know. Positions
that's it.
To bring great to the world in book form or in TV or in the movie, why not choose the high road? That's what I try to do.
I agree with you. Well, I took care of my mom for 19 years. And when she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I had to retire from teaching, because my sister was helping my nephews and my niece, and my brother had 3 sons, and now he's putting 2 through college, and it's difficult. So you don't put your mother in a nursing home ever, but to go into debt at times. Yeah. So my mom was home. I work really hard. And the last book that I wrote is The Vanishing Mind of Ruth Swerdloff, an Alzheimer's journal, a sufferer's journal. And it is on Amazon, and I did write it. And people like Carlin Eggers and John Land and a whole bunch of New York Times bestselling authors read it and thought it was great and gave me blurbs. And I am currently almost done with my next Faces Behind the Stone series. I don't claim to be great. I'm learning. It's told from the point of view of the dead person that has to learn the lesson behind the stone, and it's for teens that have done, people that have done the wrong thing and learned because they're behind the gravestone what they should have done to start with. So I just have one more story to write that I wrote with, I'm not going to say who, one of my nephews actually wrote it with me. And when I'm done with that, it'll be Faces Behind the Stone, Hidden Truths and Lies. And I'm hoping that that would be great. And I think I may write another one for caregivers, because I don't think people realize, Herbie, like you took care of your parents for so long, and I don't think people realize how vital and how important it is that what you're doing is a job, and it's thankless, but it's not thankless, because my mother, from till the day she died on March 7th, 2011, at 9:30 in the morning, knew who I was. And I mean, I would walk into a hospital room and go, Ruthie, and she would just shut up. She was funny, and I don't think people realize that when a person gets sick, that they're going to be testy and annoying, and their behavior is going to change, and you've got to have a sense of humor or forget it. So what else would you like to tell everyone? You wrote that you owe your life and career to Elizabeth Montgomery and Bill Asher. Why do you say that?
It's true, because I would not, every good thing that's ever happened in my life, in my career, I owe to Elizabeth Montgomery and Bill Asher, because Bill Asher is the one that I had contacted originally to do an interview, because also to do a, we were going to do a new series together, and when that fell through, I said, I want to do the Bewitched book, and I asked if Elizabeth, if he would talk to Elizabeth for me to do an interview, and he did, and it's because of him that I got to Elizabeth Montgomery. It's because of the Bewitched book that happened because of Elizabeth Montgomery and Bill Asher that every good thing in my career followed, whether it's my other books or whether it's Bewitched, the Eat Your Hollywood Story that I did, or Annie's biography of Elizabeth that was on television, or any good thing that happened after the Bewitched book happened because of the Bewitched book. So I owe them, Elizabeth Montgomery, William Asher, and all of Elizabeth's beautiful children, I owe, and Robert Foxworth too, my career to them. It's because of them that I have a career. Now, as far as what I would love people to realize too is, again, as I said earlier, I did The Essential Montgomery, the second book, The Essential of Montgomery, Guide to Her Magical Performances, and you can get that book, or Twitch Upon a Star, or NBC and Me, or the Bionic book, or any of my books, by either going to BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, or you can contact me at HerbieJPilato.blogspot.com, or just email me directly at HerbieJPilato@Outlook.com, and you can order a personally autographed book that way.
You can also put all of that information, every bit of it. I have a special site on Facebook called Authors with Style. It's an open site for promotions. For anyone that wants to go more about Herbie, you can put it right there. You could put it on my Facebook wall, too. I don't always my reviewing a book site is strictly for people that want reviews or do want to write positive reviews. But Authors with Style and my Facebook wall for Herbie, you can put all that information there, and I'll get it out there. Don't worry. I will make sure that everybody reads it, because for some reason, everybody reads what I write. It's amazing. I put out a review yesterday. I don't know. I put out a review yesterday, and in 5 minutes, was Playing with Fire with Tess Gerrinson would be my pick for the month. Let me tell you, you got to read it. And Invisible Wounds by Dustin Buten was absolutely fantastic. I've read some really good stuff, and I've read some stuff that I don't write negative reviews. I don't believe in that. I won't pan a book, and if I think a book isn't at least 3.5 or 4 stars, I won't review it at all. I'll just tell the author, I'll give you a summary, and that's about what I'm going to do. But there is a YA author that I'm trying to figure out why she's not on the New York Times bestseller list, Mystery of the Green Goblin by Fran Orenstein, for kids that want to learn how to get along and what happens when a young kid is wrongly accused and what happens when the whole neighborhood comes to his defense. This is fantastic. And what happens when this boy wants to get noticed and stays with the wrong person, wrong kids, and learns a lesson that he'll never forget. The Mystery of the Green Goblin by Fran Orenstein is my YA pick probably for the year. And I think in December, I'm going to put out my top 50 books for 2015. And, of course, Switch Upon the Stars is going to be right there. And what I do, like they do on Dancing with the Stars, I write in no particular order. It works for me. This way, it doesn't work. So before we go, we read Glamour, Gidgets, and The Girl Next Door. I am going to do a review of that as soon as I let the pile go, and I would love to do another interview with you to talk about that book, and I would love some of the people in that book, like Dawn Wells, Goldie Hawn, oh boy, that would really be something, Sally Field, who I absolutely love, Marlo Thomas, who's one of my favorite people in the world. I don't think Ingrid Stevens is around anymore, but Kate Jackson, Jacqueline Smith. By the way, Jacqueline Smith's line at Kmart, I'm wearing it right now, it's fantastic. Her clothing line is amazing. And the Nicki Minaj, too. What can I say? I'm little. So everybody can learn more about Herbie by going to Barnes & Noble, Amazon. And please go on Facebook and look at Throwback Thursday tonight. You won't be disappointed. And what else would you like to add before we close and Fran goes to the dentist?
Please feel free to friend me on Facebook and and that way it'll be easier to connect it. So, to Herbie J. Pilato on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay, now before we close in about 2 minutes, you just wrote an article, because it's Halloween and everybody wants to get scared. You wrote an article called The Legend of Elizabeth Montgomery. And
correct.
You posted it on Facebook. And I'm trying to read it. It's just that the print is really small. So can you tell us how come you wrote that and what it includes?
Yes, that was for the Television Academy, Emmys.org, to again commemorate the 40th anniversary of The Legend of Lizzie Borden, her groundbreaking Emmy-nominated TV movie, and also to celebrate the 20th anniversary of her passing this year. So there's two major anniversaries, and I wanted to commemorate it, and the Television Academy so lovely and joyfully welcomed me to write that for them, which I was very honored to do.
Well, I hope that when you have your talk show, it's in New York, so I could come and be in the front row.
You're going to be on it.
Oh, okay. That would be even better. I would definitely have to be there. And I love the picture of Agnes Moorehead and the girl that played Tabitha and Elizabeth Montgomery. Elizabeth Montgomery will always be, her legacy is never going to die. And I was really honored to be asked to do the special tribute to her on my WordPress site. So if you want to look up more information, and please do connect with Herbie. And thank you so much for today. And when you have time in January, February, or whenever, please let me know when you want to do a second interview for Glamour, Gidgets, and The Girl Next Door. So I'm sure you have.
Thank you so much. For being so welcoming, and blessings for all the great joy that you bring to the world through your programs and through your wonderful positive reviews and your positive heart. And I'll be praying for you today.
Thank you so much. Everybody have a very nice day, and I'm off to the dentist. Thanks, Herbie. Bye.
Okay.